To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is Glow in the Dark Radio, the science fiction podcast. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. You can find my stuff online at glowinthedarkradio.com or mikeluoma.com. M-I-K-E-L-U-O-M-A. That's how you spell my name. And that's how you can find me on Facebook and Twitter, too, after both their .com/MikeLuoma. And we have a Facebook Glow in the Dark Radio page, too. Facebook.com/GlowInTheDarkRadio. You can go to any of my pages to sign up for my mailing list, too. I invite you to do so. I'm going to get back to the mailing list. Kind of eased up this summer, but as we head into the fall, I'll let you know a little bit more about what's going on. Well, the Adventures of Alibi Jones are what's going on the podcast. We're in the middle of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. Chapter 28 on the way today. Out of the frying pan of Sirius Central, into the intergalactic line of fire, basically. Alibi Jones is trying to escape from Sirius Central, where he was more a prisoner than a patient. His friend, Dr. Krishnaverti, helped him escape. And he got out of there in a small shipping container. Or at least it looked like a shipping container. It was actually a fully powered ship. Very short range. And Alibi has managed to get to the colony world of Depot, but now he's out of fuel and his shipping container is hurtling towards a Solar Alliance starship. They've not been able to identify him, and so they're getting ready to blow him out of the sky, or out of the space. So we're going to see if Alibi can manage to avoid getting shot as we get into Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. In the news, this week sees the release of my new graphic novel. If you've been waiting to get all of Introducing Red Hot under one cover, now is the time. I haven't fixed the homepage yet, but as soon as I finish recording this, I'm going to update the website and make sure you can just click over to glowinthedarkradio.com and get your hands on the graphic novel. It's being done as a print-on-demand book by IndiePlanet.com. So if you want to go to IndiePlanet.com, you'll see it right there on the front page. At least it's there now. So yes, hot on the heels of releasing Introducing Red Hot number 3, which completed the series, I've collected the series as a graphic novel. If you review comics and you want to review the graphic novel, let me know. Just get in touch. GlowInTheDarkRadio@gmail.com is the straightforward email address. But you can also get in touch on Facebook or Twitter and tell me that you're a comic book reviewer and you want to review the graphic novel. I'll hook you up. My fellow Vermont comic creator Greg Giordano thinks that Introducing Red Hot would be a good young adult graphic novel. He said, you know, maybe you're making a mistake marketing it to comic book people because it's really more of a great coming-of-age story without, you know, all the titillation you get with some of these 40-year-old guys who are reading comics. His point was, you know, they're probably not looking for something this wholesome. I was like, really? So he was suggesting trying to market it to the young adult market. I don't know about that, but we'll see. It is pretty much an all-ages story, although it does deal with, you know, love and people living together and death. So there's some heady concepts explored. It's probably a young adult book. I wouldn't have, you know, kids under 10 reading it, but probably 12 and up. Then again, I think of Vatican Assassin as kind of a young adult book, or at least, you know, accessible to young adults. And some people have said, yeah, but Mike, it's full of F-bombs. And ashes, shit bombs? I don't know. Anyway, my response is, have you ever heard kids talk? Hello. Oh, we can pretend they don't say these things, but okay, fine. I know one of the Amazon reviews even says that. They're like, this almost has a young adult sensibility, but all those F-bombs. And then they say it doesn't bother them, but might bother others. Okay. There are no F-bombs in Red Hot. Let me just assure you, I'm not making that comparison. My intent with Red Hot was to write a great superhero coming-of-age story all about this third-generation superhero trying to prove himself. And how you do that? So if that idea intrigues you, I hope you'll pick it up. In other news, I got my invitation to Aresia 2017 this week, which is a beautiful thing. So I've got to sign up for panels and stuff there. I'll be doing that a little bit later on today. So there's stuff happening. It keeps happening. The work continues. And I did write huge chunks of text this week for the new Alibi Jones novel. I don't know if that's news, but I'm going to mention it here as part of the news. I wrote another easily 3,500, 4,000 words, which is a good feeling. But, you know, I need to do that about, 12 times before there's even a novel here. So, but I needed to. I've been doing a lot of comic book lettering and a lot of book production, but I needed to get back to just the plain old creation of the thing, you know? So that felt good. So yes, work on Alibi Jones and the Starseeds of Earth continues. And I like it. I like where it's going. It's good. I think you'll like it. Hope you'll like it. It's like the first ingredients coming together now, though, so, you know, the cake is a long way from being baked. To extend the metaphor. And that does it for news. Coming up next, we're going to get into Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Dan the Art Man's Book Reviews, a podcast where I share my book reviews with you. I go about my reviews a little different. I try not to, like, summarize the book. I just kind of try and tell you how I felt about the book, why I liked it, why I didn't, and that's about it. Mostly, I read sci-fi and fantasy, but I also try and read broadly Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, 11/22/63 by Stephen King, dandantheartman.com.
Now, here's Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Alibi jumped across to the container's controls to see if the crate's shipping beacon was turned on. It wasn't. They must have turned off the beacon when they set him adrift. He hadn't noticed. He turned it back on and hoped for the best. Wait! Got something, the voice on the open comm said. Hold your fire. That's a project object, according to its beacon. Hit it with a holding beam. Alibi lurched forward as the shipping container came to a sudden stop.
Huh! Should I tell them I'm in here? Nah, shouldn't be necessary. They should turn me over to the project. Would rather deal with project people at this point.
He watched as the Stinger ship used the holding beam to swing his container back towards the aft end of the vessel. Two of the Stinger's crew then came out and moved the container into the ship's hold. As Alibi watched from inside his container, the ship's captain and first officer came to the hold to personally inspect their new find. He couldn't hear them. Either the external mics were dead or couldn't pick up their conversation. They didn't waste much time assessing the container, giving it a quick visual once over. Then they left Alibi in the dark. Before too long, the lights came back on, and a safe ground crew from Depot entered the hold. They attached grav handles and floated the container off the Stinger ship. Alibi watched from the container's interior as they floated his crate across Depot's port and into a project holding area. They lowered the container back to the ground.
Gotta get out of here.
Alibi didn't wait. He opened the secret door and slid out of the container. He sealed the door shut, seamless, behind him. A couple of people from the ground crew were still nearby. Alibi kept the container between them as he looked around the holding area for the way out.
The delivery guys just reported it missing, Alibi overheard one of the ground crew report, after it had been recovered. And the project crew already came by here once to try to pick it up. Kind of suspicious, if you ask me. Who's asking you? Another joked.
Alibi left them to their witty repartee and crept out of the holding area. He emerged into a part of the spaceport he knew, but not well, still inside the safe facility.
I'll feel better when I get out into the public spaces, although it is good to know my people are here somewhere. Bet they're the project crew.
Looking down, he decided to do as his dress suggested and began jogging. He made his way through the safe facility
and out into the main port, nodding at anyone who made eye contact, but not stopping.
Just out for a jog. Don't mind me.
Alibi needed to find out where his cruiser was berthed and get in touch with his crew. He jogged down the concourse into Depot's Port's main passenger terminal. The bright lights and flashy signs were designed to attract travelers very different from Alibi. He found it easy to resist their beckoning as he walked past, on his way to a more civilized place, the Pilot's Lounge. The Pilot's Lounge on Depot was a three-story entertainment complex, three floors of bars and restaurants, with cheap sleep cubicles on a fourth floor above, available at an hourly rate. Alibi preferred a dive bar called The Other Place, tucked away in the back of the second floor where people could read, write, do whatever, and be left alone. He headed there. Cat knew it was a good place to look for him, and Alibi could look up where the cruiser was berthed while he waited. Alibi walked in and looked around the bar. Some sort of familiar faces, but no one that stood out for good or bad. No Cat or Emily or even Brisby. He headed over to the bar and sat down in an empty chair. "Could I get a Depot downdraft?" Alibi ordered. The bartender placed a pint in front of him. Alibi sipped a little off the top so he wouldn't spill, then lifted the pint for a real drink. When he put the glass down, a man stood next to him who hadn't been there a moment before. Unlike the others in the bar, he had a somewhat familiar-looking face. "Alibi Jones?"
"Depends on who's asking," Alibi said.
"Name's Hector. Hector Ruiz," he said, extending his hand. Alibi shook it, wary.
"Owner and captain of the Libra Campista."
"Yeah, I'm Alibi Jones," Alibi said.
"Nice to meet you," Hector said.
"You're kind of famous."
"Some would say infamous," Alibi said. He racked his brain, trying to remember where he knew the man from. He'd seen him somewhere before.
"Pleasure to meet you."
"Yeah, heard you practically got run out of the Solar Alliance," Hector said. "Now trying to make it out here on the Depot Fringe, huh?"
"Something like that," Alibi said.
"Running cargo and stuff."
"Well, it's not my pleasure, but I'm working for Bill Gentry," Hector said. "Paying off a debt. The man has peculiar late fees. Calls in favors. Has people like me do things like this."
Alibi nodded, but remained silent.
"And what this is, you see, is that he sent me to help you set up your dues schedule," Hector said, explaining.
"Gentry said he spoke with you before?"
"He did," Alibi said. "I've been wondering when I'd hear from him next."
"Ta-da!"
Hector said. He spread his arms comically. Alibi gave him a deadpan stare back. Hector rummaged in a pocket in his jumpsuit and pulled out a secure crystal. "It's all on there. Where to send your payments, when, what percentage you owe on what goods. Give it to your business manager, but make sure she knows it's not for public consumption, eh?"
"Got it," Alibi said, as he accepted the crystal from Hector.
A flash of recognition hit Alibi as he touched the crystal.
"He's the guy who first saw the ghost ship. Now I remember. But I can't let him know that I know he reported it to the Solar Alliance. That's not public knowledge."
"Do I? Have we met before?" Hector asked. "You look more familiar than I thought you would."
"Don't think so," Alibi said. "But it's funny, I thought the same thing when I saw you. Maybe we've bumped into each other before."
"Maybe. Didn't know for sure if I'd find you here," Hector said. "Saw your ship was due in, but wasn't sure if you'd landed yet."
"I'm coming back from a side trip," Alibi said. "Wasn't with the ship. Meeting them here."
"Gotcha," Hector said.
"Do you have time for a beer?" Alibi asked him.
Hector looked at him, puzzled. He nodded at the crystal.
"I just gave you that, and you want to buy me a beer?"
"Why not?" Alibi said. "It's not you asking me for money."
"Not everybody gets that," Hector said.
"Thanks. I think I will."
He waved over at a heavy-set big guy by the door. The man nodded back and visibly relaxed.
Hector sat down on a stool next to Alibi as Alibi called the bartender over. The bartender took Hector's order. Alibi added it to his and then settled up his tab.
"How long have you been working out here?" Alibi asked.
"Almost 11 years now,"
Hector said. Just you? Alibi asked. Nah, Hector said. Got two ships with full crews. Nice little operation. Mind if I ask why you're working for Gentry? You can ask, Hector said. He gave Alibi a look that said he wasn't about to answer. But then he smiled. I'm kidding. It's like I said, just repaying a small debt doing this stuff. Missed a meeting and a payment. So Gentry has me reminding other people about their meetings and payments for about a month, in addition to my regular business. Almost done. Another week to go. Sounds like Gentry has an interesting sense of humor, Alibi said. Sense of humor? Hector asked. Don't know if it's humor. I don't feel like laughing, you know? Gotcha, Alibi said. He didn't know why, but he kind of liked this Hector. Seemed like an honest man. So bottom line, it's best not to miss a meeting with Gentry. You got it, Hector said. Why did you miss your meeting? Alibi asked.
Maybe I can get him to talk about the Roday ship.
That I'm not going to tell you, Hector said, shaking his head. You wouldn't believe me anyway. Alibi arched an eyebrow. Oh, really? Let's just say, there are some pretty strange things out here on the fringe, Hector said. And we ran into one of them. Made us late for our appointment. Sounds mysterious, Alibi said. It was something, all right, Hector said. Alibi? A woman's voice called out his name. Alibi looked for the source and saw Emily and Cat walking his way through the bar. He waved. Emily smiled at him. He grinned back.
Could get to like her in this timeline, too.
Your crew? Hector asked, grabbing his attention back. Alibi nodded. Hector drained the rest of his beer. I'll let you be, then. Good to meet you, Alibi Jones. He extended his right hand. Alibi shook it. Hector turned to leave, brushing past Emily and Cat on his way. Who is that? Emily asked. Another shipowner, Alibi said. Name's Hector Ruiz. Alibi held up the crystal. He delivered this, a gift, from Billy Gentry. It's our tribute instructions.
Tribute? Cat asked.
Gotta pay to play out here on the Depot Fringe, Alibi explained. And Bill Gentry is evidently the one collecting the dues out here. Knew this was coming, just didn't know when or how. Alibi handed the crystal to Emily. Take it back with you to the ship, see what he's asking for. Then let me know what you need, Alibi said. Why me? She asked. Part of doing business out here, he said. And you're our business manager. Thanks, she said, her tone loaded with sarcasm. Alibi stood up from his bar stool. Let's go, he said. Been a while since I've seen the cruiser. Longer since I've seen the base.
It is still there, Cat said.
Alibi laughed.
What?
Cat said, confused by Alibi's reaction.
Pure comedy, Alibi said, mimicking the way Cat had been saying the term.
You made a funny, Cat.
I do not understand your comedy, Cat said.
Not to worry, Cat, Alibi said. I don't always understand it either. Emily chuckled. Cat seemed confused. Don't worry about it, Cat, Alibi said. Come on. He led the other two out of the bar.
Much better, Alibi said, as he settled into his captain's seat.
Home again, jiggity jig, as Aunt Anita likes to say. Home? Emily asked. She strapped herself into the seat on the bridge behind Cat in the co-pilot's chair, on Alibi's right. This ship, the cruiser, and this bridge feel more like home than any of my apartments. Any place I stay for short periods, Alibi said. Even my aunt's place on Ceres, where I grew up. That's her place, you know. My place on Cat's Eye is rented out to some stranger. I've only been out at the Hornet's Nest a few months, so this ship is the closest thing I have to a home. I've missed it. That sounds kind of sad, Emily said. Sorry?
My home is on her, Cat said, and I miss it dearly.
Sorry, Cat, Alibi said. My home is the Force, Emily said, and truth be told, working undercover, this covert ops stuff, feels a little like being away from that home, even though we're still in the safe.
You and Alibi are, Cat said. I am not in the safe, but an ally.
Yes, you are, Alibi said. You're both Alibi's allies. That's silly, Emily said. Good, Alibi said. Thought we were all getting a little silly here. Silly is good. Alibi called up the cruiser's controls and began powering up the ship. Cat, start the preflight, Alibi said. Let's head home. Once they'd cleared transpace and switched back to conventional engines, Alibi called up Krish as they flew back to the Hornet's Nest. He wanted to know how his disappearance from the hospital had gone over.
At first they were crazed, Krish said. Panicked. I tried to calm them down. Told them you had checked yourself out. And I had no idea where you'd gone. They started to call you a fugitive, until I asked if that meant you had been a prisoner. Then I apologized for not realizing that had been your status, silly old man that I am, in answer to which I was assured you were not a prisoner. Then how can he be a fugitive, I asked them. Why couldn't he check himself out?
And? Alibi prodded.
Medical observation, Krish said. Alien tech. Good of humanity. Stuff like that. Nothing very coherent. I pulled rank and dismissed their arguments. As the senior project scientist on this case, I said that I believe we've had more than enough time to study the poor man here in a hospital, and we've learned nothing. Better to put him back in the field, see if the stimulus there makes a difference. Something like that.
And they accepted that, Alibi asked. Somehow, I don't see Van and Curry agreeing to...
To a degree, Krish said, interrupting. You are not considered a fugitive.
But...
You are to be kept under regular observation, Krish said. In the field.
What? Alibi asked.
No fucking way am I going to be under constant watch.
How? Who? Wait, Krish, what the hell?
So many questions, Krish said. Please, let me finish.
Sorry, Krish, Alibi said. Go ahead.
As a condition of backing off of fugitive, Dr. Van demanded a project doctor be assigned to your crew, Krish said. I think he saw himself out at your Hornet's Nest, Alibi.
Fat chance.
Well, anyway, I agreed, Krish said.
What? Alibi was furious in an instant. How could you...
It had to be done. To keep you free, Alibi, Krish said. Besides, I went above Van's head and made other arrangements. His demands were met, but not as he thought they would be.
Alibi calmed down, a little.
What do you mean? Alibi asked.
Well, I did some research, Krish said. I see your base has many rooms and apartments.
It does, Alibi said, and we don't use many of them.
I would not think that you would, Krish said. But you will be needing to fix one up for this old fool, who volunteered to be your new observer.
What? Krish? You? Alibi said, shocked. What about your temporal research lab? How can you come out to the Hornet's Nest?
Dr. Shinose will take care of what's left of the temporal lab, as she has been, Alibi, Krish said. They trimmed our budget to the bone. We don't even have funding for new research and experiments at this time, Alibi. They pay our salaries and keep the buildings running, but that's about all, sad to say. But she'll do fine. The lab will be fine. And very clean.
Alibi digested the news.
Krish? Out here? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean... Yeah, sorry about the budget thing, too, Krish, Alibi said. Just thinking this through. You're going to join us out at our base? Do we need to come pick you up?
Yes, Krish said. And no, I will be joining you, but I will not be needing you to come pick me up. I have made my own arrangements, you see.
I see.
Project ship, Krish said. For me and my things.
Things? Alibi asked.
I will need some lab space, Krish said, matter of fact, in addition to apartments. I'm coming with some baggage, you see.
Baggage.
Oh yeah, I see, Alibi said.
Love the guy, but not sure I want him around all the time. Of course, if he has a lab, that might mean he won't want to come with us out in the cruiser too much. Maybe? If the project and the SA have decided I need to be observed, could do a lot worse than Krish.
When should we expect you? Alibi asked.
Let's see, Krish said. I need to wrap things up here first. 3 weeks? Something like that. Hate to guess. I will let you know when I'm more certain of my timetable.
Okay then, I guess, Alibi said. Keep me informed, Krish.
Not immediately. That makes me feel better for some reason. Gotta get used to the idea.
No, that's fine, thanks. Just wanted to check in, been traveling, Alibi said, as he signed off the comm. He tried calling again as soon as they'd gotten back to base. As the worried nephew, he could make a call into safe command without blowing his cover. Just another citizen asking about his loved one. Not a member of safe covert ops, nope.
Hell, I could call Nico fucking Constantine himself in this case.
In truth, he tried not to worry. But his aunt still hadn't returned to Ceres. The safe now had her listed officially as potentially missing. Anita Capituna could take care of herself, if anyone could. But it wasn't like her not to check in. Alibi sighed and looked around his base office, trying to think of what he could do next.
Feel kind of helpless. This sucks.
Cannot tell you how surprised I was to hear it was you, Alibi Jones, calling me, the smirking man said, looking at Alibi over the comm.
Why? Thought your people left me lost in space?
I'm glad you accepted my call, Mr., Prime Representative, Alibi said. Wasn't sure you would.
Call me Nico, Constantine said. Can I call you Alibi?
Sure, Alibi said. Nico?
That was Chapter 28 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Mind if I call you Alibi?
Sure, Nico. So Alibi reaches out to basically his arch enemy. I mean, in a way, Constantine's been trying to destroy him here. Alibi's not even really sure why. But he also knows that it was Constantine's office that sent his aunt off, so if he wants to try to track down his aunt, he might as well start with Constantine and let him know that he knows his aunt is missing and it's his fault. But this conversation is just beginning, so we'll pick it up next time. Find out how it goes as Alibi and Nico Constantine talk about Alibi's Aunt Anita in Chapter 29. It'll be next week. Chapter 29 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest coming up on Glow in the Dark Radio. A reminder of our news things, news items. The graphic novel is out. The Introducing Red Hot graphic novel is out. All three issues under one cover, the whole story, bang, there for you to read. You can get the bound copy, print on demand through IndiePlanet.com. Just go to GlowInTheDarkRadio.com to get the links. Got my invitation for Aresia 2017. So I'll be going back to that in Boston next Martin Luther King Day, January of 2017. That weekend, actually. And I got more done on Alibi Jones and the Starseeds of Earth, so that's going to be coming. Still very much in the preliminary stages, but just feels good to be writing it. And so I figured I'd let you know what's happening. And that's going to do it for this week. Our music, as ever, by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.